This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I am Patsy with a Z, and I am the last of the red hot book lovers. And I am so happy to welcome today somebody who I love her books. I really do. And it's so nice to welcome our special correspondent here at Joy on Paper, who is also a fantastic author, Rita Moreau. Hi, Rita.
Hey, Patsy. I am so excited to chat with you today.
Well, this is so much fun because, you know, I love the Ghost and Camper Cook Mystery series. I love the way you always say cookie.
It is cookie.
It is. And so we'll hear a little bit about that and also about, you know, how you started writing, because it's exciting now. NaNoWriMo is coming up, and I've been having authors email me saying, well, you know, I listened to you and I listened to you even during the pandemic and I didn't do it, but this year I'm going to try because I've been dreaming about writing. And some of them are people who have recently retired. And that's what you did. You know, you
absolutely. And I encourage them to do exactly that. It might be somewhat intimidating to sit down and think about writing 50,000 words. Don't even think about that. One day at a time, even if you wrote a paragraph, just get going.
That's right. And that's what happened to you. You know, there you were, years of working in an office, and then one day, the character came to you for your first series. Do you want to tell us, what was that moment like when you realized, my goodness, I really have a book in me?
Well, actually, I had three books in me because my very first book, Bribing St. Anthony, was like three books in one. And so it was kind of like a moment. My husband and I were very fortunate to be out on the road in a motorhome. And I said, this is a good time to sit down and get writing. And so I did.
See, it just proves that you can do your writing anywhere you want.
Absolutely. And everybody does. They find their spot. Some writers are happy writing like in a Starbucks. But you do have to find your spot, your creative spot. And also you might find a certain part of the day your brain is more creative than others. Mine tends to be in the morning. So that's when I get up and I write.
So, you know, the process of writing is in itself a lot of fun, because once you're there and you start writing, whether you're writing by hand or writing on the computer, and you start seeing the words come out, does it sometimes just amaze you how clever you are? Because some of your dialogue is so good.
Well, I don't know about being clever, but I will tell you how it happens. After a while, you get to know your characters, and your characters take off. I mean, they just lead you here and there, and you just kind of follow along and put the words down on the page.
Well, I think that's what you hear from people who read the Kooky Mystery series. Why don't you tell us the main characters there, because they are so good, and I have so many people who just, particularly there's one of them that they really know very well.
Well, it all started with Mabel. Mabel was married to a doctor who, I guess the word is, dumped her for, and I'm just going to put it out there, a barfly.
Oh.
And so Mabel was sitting in the country club, you know, drinking too many Cosmos, and her good friend Lily invited her to go out on the road in their motorhome. And Mabel said, I'm going to get my own motorhome. So she purchases a vintage Airstream, which is a beautiful motorhome. And Irma, a ghost, came at no charge. Mm. And so Irma and Mabel, they're out on the road, and poor Irma, she's stuck in purgatory, and they discover she gets extra days, extra time off of her time in purgatory by solving murders. So that's what they do. They get out on the road, and at each stop, somehow a murder occurs.
Well, that's part of the fun. We have to have a nice murder and lots of red herrings to steer people in different directions.
Yes, that's true. And I'm telling you, Mabel and Irma, they just lead the way for me, and I just kind of follow along, put the dialogue on the page.
Well, it is so good. As you know, my sister, Natalie, is known as the connoisseur of cozy mysteries.
Oh.
And boy, she loves Irma. She's so always, what's Irma going to be wearing next? So it's,
well, that's true. I forgot to mention, Irma has so many costumes. You would think she has a Spielberg studio in her her costume wardrobe directory. Every day she's in a different costume.
Well, according to her mood at the time, which can sometimes be surprising to Mabel, I think.
Yeah, sometimes she shows up as a nun, which is a little scary because it comes along with a large ruler.
So, it is a wonderful series, and you're up to book four in that series. But as you say, the characters do want to sort of just take you along for the ride.
And they do. They certainly do, especially Irma and Mabel.
So, are they going to be in a new series?
Actually, they are. I'm working on it. My lightning rod, the love of my life, my husband George, he left us. I know he's up in heaven. He was so proud to tell people he was the author's husband. And so I have sort of lost my way, but I'm getting back. And this next book that I'm working on is called Murder in Wacky Florida. And we all know Florida is wacky.
It gives you a lot of things to work with.
Yes, quite a lot.
Okay, well, you know, the nice thing about writing is that you get comments from your readers. What are some of the comments people have sent you?
You know what the wonderful comments are that they like my characters, which is important because you do want your readers to connect to your characters and you want them to like your characters. And they also like the fact that, Irma is out on the road and they learn a little bit about each location that she is at. So it started out in Savannah, Georgia. Then she moved on to Nashville, Honky Tonk Row. Then she wound up in the Badlands and the Rocky Mountains. So readers actually enjoy that quite a bit.
So tell us a little bit about once you've written the book, the next part is actually getting out there and trying to meet readers.
Yes. As an indie author, you kind of wear all hats. And I do try to get out there and meet readers as much as I can at different book events, at different anything I can do. I have to push myself in that direction because a lot of writers are comfortable sitting in their seat and we're sort of recluses. So we have to get out and push ourselves to talk to people and kind of, you know, say, hey, I've got a book. I've written a book. So I do have bookmarks, and they come in very handy, very handy. And in addition to that, I find that I keep a box in my car of my books and I'm happy to pass out my books. I mean, what better marketing than for my for someone to start reading the book?
And, of course, another part of writing a book is that you do have to get involved in some media. So what are you finding? How do you approach it?
That is a difficult question. I'm thrilled to be on your program on Joy on Paper. It's not something that door doesn't always open to you. So you just have to keep your eyes open and see if you can slip through that door.
And, I mean, part of the fun of writing is being able sometimes, now that the pandemic's over, to meet people who have read your books. Doesn't that give you a tingle?
Oh, it does. It really does. In Florida, I have to, first of all, I have to give thanks to you, Patsy, and to your sister, Natalie, for all of your support over the years. And also to the Indian Shores Library Group. They have been very supportive of my writing. So they have been super, super. And so that's one way to get your foot in the door. Maybe visit your local library. Get involved in some writing groups. There's always ways to do that.
And so your process when you're writing, do you find sometimes that you just get so wrapped up in the storyline that you're surprised sometimes that you're actually sitting, you know, at home?
Sometimes that happens to me, but other times I'm like, oh, geez, maybe I'll go do the laundry now. So it's you do have to sit down, focus. But you're right. Once I start writing, I find myself, oh, yeah, let's do this. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And as I said, your characters take you on the way.
And
it's a lot of fun.
The Kooky Mystery Series is ideal for you because you and your husband, George, you did some touring across America.
It's perfect. It seems to be perfect because we were so fortunate and blessed to visit all these different locations. So I can call on those areas. It's not like, pulling it up on Wikipedia. So that has been very helpful.
And it's a nice opportunity to relive some fond memories.
Yes, absolutely. When we first started out on the road, I was a little nervous. Here we were in a motorhome. It happened to be a vintage Bluebird. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, we're out on the road. Where are we going? But when I look back on doing that, I am so thankful. My husband always pushed me to take a leap of faith and do a lot of these things. So I'm so thankful we did that.
Now, when you're thinking about it, do you sometimes imagine this as a television series? Do you visualize it that way? Because that's what happens to me when I love a book. I see it in my head as a movie.
Well, that is my dream. I think a lot of authors, that would be a dream, and that is my dream. That oh my goodness, maybe this would make a nice Netflix streaming series. That is my dream. In fact, I guess in a way, it was my mother's dream back in the day. She, as a single mother, she raised three children. On her own. Of course, she had help from her mother. But her dream was always to become a movie star. So I guess I've taken on that dream also.
Well, it's a great dream, and you're making it happen with every book that you're writing. You're getting closer and closer to that point.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. You never know. You never know.
But from listening to Joy on Paper, we have authors who, have been writing since they retired, and they keep going. And Eugenia Lovett West was here to celebrate her 100th birthday in February, and she wrote a book about cybercrime.
Yes,
I mean that took some research.
That's amazing, absolutely, absolutely. That she is quite an amazing lady. and to celebrate her 100th birthday. Happy birthday to her.
And then now we have somebody else who's celebrating an upcoming birthday.
Yes, and she is also another amazing lady. Shall we drop her name?
Yes.
Miss Carol.
Because she's
Miss
probably
Carol
listening.
J. Perry. Miss Carol J. Perry, another awesome lady. I mean, it's like playing golf. You can do it until you're 100, so we're just going to continue writing.
That's it.
See where it takes us. So those of you who are listening to this program and you're thinking, gosh, I'd love to write a book, get going. Just get started. You don't write your book all in one day. Trust me.
So when you first started, did you find that process? Did you say to yourself, had you read some books about writing, or did you just sit down and say, I can do it. I'm going to do it.
No, I'm one who has to read and study and take classes. And so I did. I took some creative writing courses, actually, out at the University of South Florida, because we lived in Tampa. And I did take some courses online also. So I'm one that has to take a course to learn how to do these things. But in the end, writing is just sitting down and doing it.
Now, when you're out there and talking to people about your books, do people ask you for advice?
They do. They ask, how do you get started? How do you write a book? And because when you think about writing a book, it's like, oh my goodness, how do I write a book? I mean, you pick up a book and it's like, it's heavy. And I will tell them, just get started. Sit down. I start with an outline. In fact, this is where my husband George helped me. He said, let's list all your characters, which I did. I start with an outline. I'm more of a plotter as opposed to a pantser. There are some authors who just write by the seat of their pants, and they're called pantsers. So I usually have my list of characters, and I have my outline, and I have an idea of where I'm going. I don't always know the ending. And I found early on it's not a good idea, at least for me, to have the title of the book. I held off on that.
When you get to the point where you're sort of midway through a book, and now you, as you said, you've been plotting it, at that point, are you really aware of the little clues that you're leaving around to, intrigue the reader?
You know, to be honest, Patsy, I would say no. They just seem to kind of plop down there. And even though I would say I am a plotter, I'm also I guess I have to back up a little. I have to say I'm a hybrid. Because once I get started, I am a little bit of a pantser. And that's where your characters sort of take over.
So with the new series, you're going to be able to touch upon a lot of interesting aspects of life in Florida, which is always exciting.
It is. It is very exciting. And there's a lot to choose from, which is why we have some great authors who base their books in Florida. Tim Dorsey, for one. And he has a lot of kooky characters in his books.
Oh, definitely. And I know he's one of your favorites.
Yes. And I have to say, when it comes to marketing for authors who are, maybe they have written a book, there are some marketing tools. I use a company by the name of Written Word Media. They are very helpful. And so that's something to think about once you've finished your book. And I will say the best advice I've ever received was you need an editor. And at first I was like, oh, but you know what? That particular individual, I have to thank her. She was right. You do need an editor. And then I found out there's more than one type of editor. So it's quite a learning process.
And of course, one of the things, once you've written your book, the thing with authors today, indie authors, they have to be multi-talented because they also have to have a good eye for a cover. And you certainly have done that with the covers that are coming out for the Ghost and Camper Kooky Mystery Series, because those covers are eye-catching.
Yes. I'm fortunate to have found a good cover artist, also a formatter. My husband did all my formatting, but you do need to be able to, what they call it, format your book. So if you choose to upload your book on Amazon, it's in the right order, so to speak.
Ah, okay. Well, that's something that authors have to think about when they're getting to that point where they're writing the book, but they're going to need a cover.
Yes, absolutely. A cover is very, very important. I know I've been in bookstores, and I tend to, if I see a book, what would catch my eye are the colors of the cover, and then I would pick the book up, and I would look at the cover, and I might take a peek at the first page, and you kind of get a feel for, oh yeah, I think I would enjoy reading this. I like this writer's word. That's what gravitates me to a book.
Well, you know, it is just wonderful. I think being a writer and giving people, particularly I think, you know, with cozy mysteries and sort of gentler stories, not always the high action books, but we need books like that in these troubled times.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful to have a release a way that you can sit back and relax and enjoy just some really fun characters and characters you'd love to know in your own life.
Yes. Oh, it certainly is. And I think some of the feedback that I've gotten from readers is that, you know, your book gave me some time away from my problems, my troubles. And that is the highest honor I can receive from being an author. That my books, in fact, recently a reader, she had to, every week, 5 hours of a treatment, and she took my books. And for her to tell me that's what I needed your books to get my mind off of it. You, as an author, cannot ask for more valuable. It's an honor. It's an honor for me. I don't know how to say it any better.
Well, it certainly is, and you deserve it because, you know, your books are fun, they are filled with characters and some intriguing plots there with Irma, who tends to get poor Mabel into some...
Poor Mabel, poor Mabel. But they've gotten to be very good friends. And in fact, in Murder in Wacky Florida, Irma has moved into the house with Mabel. She's now her roommate.
Ah, okay.
So it's even more fun.
Okay, we're all looking forward to that. Well, Rita, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's always a joy to talk to you. And you just let us know when it's going to be released, and we'll have you back on to talk about your latest book, okay?
And thank you, Patsy, and thank you, dear Natalie. Thank you to the both of you.
Okay. We love you.
All right.
Bye-bye now.
I love you, too. Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to have a literary gem for all of you people who want to write during NaNoWriMo, learn something about literature and how to write with Jim Lamb.
Some say the phrase red herring started in the 19th century. It describes a technique used to decide if a hunting dog was truly ready to track down animals, like a fox or a rabbit. After the dog was trained, a smoked herring was tied to a string and dragged across the trail. If the dog ignored the fishy scent, it was ready. If not, it was back to square one. I'm Jim Lamb. Let's get started. Great authors use red herrings to distract readers from real clues and hard evidence. The result? A wild goose chase that is both entertaining and engaging, but ultimately useless when it comes to solving the case. Where do red herrings work best? Mysteries and thrillers. Here are a few examples. In The Sixth Sense, well-crafted herrings were so well-placed that people paid to watch that film over and over and over again, trying to figure out what really went on. The Usual Suspects was another film chock full of herrings. That's why the ending was such a stunner. But the granddaddy of all red herrings is Murder on the Orient Express, a story teeming with more fishy twists than Finding Nemo. What makes a great red herring? Well, it should be genuinely plausible, but tinged with a nagging flaw. Take Cary Grant's character in North by Northwest. The villain and his crew think Roger Thornhill, played by Grant, is a secret agent named George Kaplan. The audience knows he isn't. The CIA and FBI know he isn't. Doesn't matter. Why? Because this fast-paced adventure thriller is so filled with relentless twists that there's no time to ponder the possible inconsistencies. Other watchworthy herrings include Shutter Island and The Matrix. But it's a film called The Prestige by Christopher Nolan that interweaves its surprises in such a clever, dark, and nuanced fashion that by the time the story ends, the audience has to take a shower to wash off all the fins and scales left by the slew of fishy tales. And speaking of showers, Alfred Hitchcock's off-the-scale Psycho, in Psycho, set a standard so high for red herrings that you'd need a flying fish to top it. But don't let that stop you from using this intriguing technique, especially if you want to engage and entice readers. I'm Jim Lamb, and you've just learned a little something-something about red herrings.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. And I am back with my next guest, Sharon Hart Green. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Patsy. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper. And the name of your book is Come Back for Me.
That's
and
right.
It is a wonderful novel, and it is the winner of the 2021 Firebird Book Award,
yes.
For historical book, and of I think also the Historical Novel Society, right?
That's right. Yes, it's a novel, so it was awarded for historical fiction. That's right.
Oh, wow! So that's quite an honor.
Yeah, no, I was delighted to receive those honors, and it's still going strong. I mean, I wrote the book a few years ago, but still selling very well, and it's relevant even more so today, one might say.
Well, yeah, it is. It's a touching story, fascinating. So tell us a little bit how you came out with the idea, and as you said, it's very meaningful in so many ways. Tell us about the book.
Okay, well, I wrote the book a few years ago, and it's really a story about two main characters, two intersecting stories about a young man right after World War II who goes in search of his sister. They're both Holocaust survivors. He's convinced that she's still alive. They were separated during the war, and he goes in search of her. And the second story is about a child of Holocaust survivors in Canada in the 60s. So there are two parallel stories happening, but they're separated in time. But eventually the two stories come together, and I think the reader isn't quite sure how they're connected, even though the two narratives follow a particular path that, in which there are hints that there is a connection, but you're not exactly sure how. But then it slowly begins to be disclosed how their two stories are linked, and the two stories come together in Israel at the end. Although I don't want to give away any spoilers.
Yeah, don't. We want people to get the book and read it and find out what happens.
That's right. I mean, it's very plot-driven, and so people find that when they start reading it, it's difficult to stop, which I'm very glad about. But I was first inspired to write the story, I suppose, partly because I had been teaching for many years at the University of Toronto. I was teaching Hebrew and Yiddish literature, and I was teaching a lot of stories about Jews in the modern period. And at a certain point, I realized that I had a story that I wanted to tell. I didn't want to just be teaching about other people's literature, but I wanted to write my own novel. It's not based on my personal experience, but yet it's based on, I would say, experiences of a lot of people that I know. It's a kind of composite of stories that I've collected over time. I grew up in a home, I'm not the child of Holocaust survivors myself, although I grew up among a lot of survivors. My best friend as a child was the child of Holocaust survivors. So I was very well acquainted with their stories, and I felt compelled to try to understand them. What had they undergone, and how was it, not just what their trauma was like, but how they survived so well, because a lot of the people that I knew actually lived fairly productive lives despite the trauma, and I was trying to understand why some people seemed to survive better than others. What was that element in their survival that allowed them to flourish as opposed to completely disintegrate? And that's part of what the story explores.
So how did you come to writing? Was this just something that... Explain your background in writing.
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about it. Well, I guess you could say as a child I was always very artistically inclined. I studied music and drama. I performed as an actress when I was a teenager. And so I was always drawn to the arts, but at a certain point I switched gears, and I followed an academic path. So I ended up going to graduate school. I went to Brandeis University in Boston, and I pursued a doctoral degree. I got my doctorate in Hebrew literature, modern Hebrew literature. And I guess you could say that artistic impulse that I had from a very young age was reawakened at a certain point in my life, that it was never completely dormant. As I said, I was always artistically inclined, even though I followed an academic path, and I ended up going into teaching, university teaching, for many years. But on the side, I started to write. And this book was written over the course of many years. I started writing thinking that it was just a short story. And then it kept expanding and expanding to the point where I knew that I had a novel there. And at a certain point, I ended up leaving teaching. I just took a break from it. And I actually didn't even go back. I just decided that writing was something that I felt fulfilled me even more than teaching. So I am now devoting myself full-time to writing, even though, you know, I had to put aside my teaching career.
But when I talk about the joy on paper, there is so much joy when you're writing, isn't there?
That's so true. When you write a good sentence, it makes your day.
Oh.
And I can rework one sentence for hours. I mean, there's something almost magical about it, I find, that sometimes the words just come to you in a way that it's unexplained. You don't even know where they come from. On a good writing day, that is. And then there are many bad writing days where you're writing and then deleting and editing. And I do a lot of that. I do a lot of polishing as I write. So it doesn't just flow out of me. But then some days it just seems to flow. It's very unpredictable.
And, of course, there's the other aspect of writing is the researching.
That's right.
Isn't that fun when you come across something as you're, you know, looking for some background information, some way to make your story more colorful or more, you know, something? And
yes.
Then you read, you do some research, and something hits you, and you're off in a path of absolute pure joy.
That's true. Often it does take you to places you don't even expect to go. It's true. I mean, a lot of people ask me, because the main character in my novel, a young man named Arthur Mandelkorn, he's Hungarian Jew, and they often say to me, well, are you of Hungarian background? And I have to tell them, I think they're sort of surprised that I say, no, I'm not Hungarian at all. I don't come from that background. But yet, I've known a lot of Hungarians, a lot of Hungarian Jews, and I did have to do a fair amount of research. I had to check my sources. I had to make sure that the little details of the kinds of foods they ate, the type of towns they came from, all of those things had to be accurate so that I wasn't misrepresenting something that needed accuracy. When it came to describing Israel, I felt there I had more of a feel for it because I've been to Israel many times, and so therefore, even though I was describing Israel at a much earlier date than I had ever been there, I mean, it was like the 40s, I mean, it was before I was born, I still felt that I could do so with some accuracy because I had been there so many times and I had a feel for what these cities were like, what the towns were like, what life on a kibbutz was like, even though it was an earlier period. But I did have to do some research, of course, and I did have to talk to a lot of people and find out, you know, some of the subtler aspects of life that maybe I didn't necessarily understand. So yes, research is always part of it, and it is fun. Definitely.
Now, one of the things that I've been talking about all during October is the upcoming NaNoWriMo, because I have quite a few. This year, I have more of my listeners who are signing up for NaNoWriMo. I'm to the point that they have to start paying me a commission. I'm getting this.
I don't even know what NaNoWriMo is. Please tell me.
Well, it is National Novel Writing Month. And
It
is an opportunity for people who have been sort of dreaming about writing, thinking about it, hoping that some spark would hit them. And NaNoWriMo is an opportunity. It's really just a fun project where you challenge yourself to write 50,000 words and in a month. And
oh,
of course,
that's
it's
a lot.
It's a lot of words. It's not a novel probably ready to be published. But what it does is teach you that discipline of writing.
Yes. Yes, it's true. It could be a good first draft, or at least first draft of part of a novel.
And it can show somebody that, yes, they do have that ability to concentrate for this. Sometimes people say, well, I want to do it, but I'm not sure I could, you know, concentrate that long. But doesn't it happen to you, like with your characters, didn't they start really taking on a life of their own?
Yes, they did. In fact, I often say that I feel like they're friends. I feel as if I know them. And they seem very real to me, even though I created them. They are real to me, absolutely.
Well, that's what makes it. That's what makes the book so interesting. I mean, that's why I think it's an award-winning book, because we think, as we're reading it, we're thinking they're real.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I was first looking for a publisher, I had a number of editors at publishing houses asking me if this was the story of my family. You know, a lot of them thought that it was a quasi-memoir. And I had to say, well, no, actually, it's not. It's a novel. It's not a memoir. And they were surprised. They thought it was based on what had happened in my own family. And I had to say, sorry, no, it's not. It is fiction.
Well, Come Back for Me is a great title, because it really, it's intriguing as you start reading it, and it has sort of several layers in and of itself.
Yes.
That I thought really works.
Yes, well, it's funny. It is a line from the story. Very early on in the story, Arthur Mandelkarn's sister, Manya, calls out to him to come back for her. She calls out, come back for me, because she's being taken away. They're being separated during the war, and he promises that he will. And that promise haunts him throughout the story, because he feels that if he does anything in his life, he has to come get her. He has to find her. And so coming back for her is his quest. At the same time, coming back is something that permeates the novel on many other layers. And I don't want to go into it in too much depth without giving away other elements of the plot, but it's something about coming home, coming back to your own identity. A lot of the people in the story, a lot of the characters, are trying to escape their Jewish identity. For various reasons, due to anti-Semitism, due to feeling that they don't quite belong. And therefore, coming back is a form of healing for various characters in the novel, both those in the 40s and those in the 1960s. And, of course, the story culminates in the late 60s, of course, in Israel.
Well, that's what I thought when I read the title. I thought, I sort of already really, right as I started the book, I got the idea of what it was going to be. And
yes.
I thought to myself, oh, this is a perfect story and a perfect title.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, it has resonated with a lot of people. And in fact, it's a book that has been picked up by educators as well. It's funny, because I did not write the book for young people. I wrote it for adults, and it certainly can be read, though, by those of all ages. There's nothing salacious in it that would be dangerous for children to read or anything of that sort. So it's funny, because educators have discovered the book and are ordering it, actually, in the United States in bulk. And it's being used in classrooms across the United States right now.
Wow. Now, that's exciting.
Yes, it's very exciting. I don't even know how it happened. It was discovered by an educational foundation originally, and they've been buying it in bulk every year. They order, you know, a large number of them, and they're going into classrooms.
Well,
which I'm
it's
very
great.
Happy about
it. It's a subject, well, in these troubled times, it is a subject that people really have to understand better.
That's right.
And I think this book definitely helps people to really understand all of the, as you said, different layers of being afraid or being reluctant about Judaism and the anti-Semitism that's out there, as we've discovered so in such a horrible way in the past few weeks.
That's right. That's why I said it right at the beginning that I think, you know, the discussion today is all the more relevant, because the whole description at the beginning of the book of Arthur and his family being hunted down like animals in the city in which he grew up, where he was completely comfortable, suddenly he's being hunted, and hunted to be killed. This was just experienced by Jews in Israel.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
A week ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's recurred, and the anti-Semitism that was beneath the surface has reemerged, unfortunately, and has to be fought. So the book, I think, does remind people of it as an ongoing struggle, and the kinds of things that people endured in the past and are enduring today.
Well, Sharon, I think it's a great book, and you have a webpage that you want people to go to?
Yes, it's just SharonHartGreen.com. So people can go and find the book. They can either order it on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. I mean, it's in bookstores as well, although there are fewer and fewer bookstores around these days, unfortunately.
It is. It's terrible.
These large websites. It's on a lot of different book websites, but Amazon and Barnes & Noble are the major sources, as well as other smaller ones as well.
Well, so are you getting invited to speak to, school groups?
Yeah, I've given so many talks. I can't even keep track of them. I've gone to book clubs, school groups, synagogues, community centers, fraternal organizations. I've given talks all over. Now, that was before COVID. I was traveling quite a bit in Canada, the States. I gave some in Israel as well. But now a lot of them are on Zoom. Even today, with COVID having receded, a lot of these groups still meet on Zoom. So most of my invitations now are to speak via Zoom, which, has some advantages because it can bring people from far and wide together. They don't have to literally be in the same city. So, of course, I always prefer to speak in person, but if someone wants me to speak on Zoom, that's fine as well. So, yes, the talks have continued, but in a slightly different format.
Well, as I said, I think it's a fantastic book, an award-winning book, and one that it touches the heart, and it also, at the same time, it is a story that it's compelling, and you want to read and find out what's going to happen. And that's always wonderful in a book.
Oh, thank you. Well, also one thing that I think surprises people, because it's not exactly a Holocaust novel, because it's really a post-war novel. But people often, when they hear about it, they say to me, oh, is it depressing? Is it going to be one of these very gruesome stories about all the horrible things that happened during the war? And I always say to them, no, you'll be surprised. It's actually a very hopeful book. And they say, really? Oh, okay. And then they come to me and say, you're right, it was extremely uplifting. So I just want to let people know that it's not a book that will just depress you and make you feel hopeless at the end. In fact, it's really a testament to human endurance and human resilience. And some of the ways in which, I think it demonstrates the ways in which people can overcome some of the worst things that happen to them.
Well, again, it's a wonderful book, and the name of it is, first of all, everybody, when you're looking for Sharon, it's Sharon Hart Green.
Yes.
And the name of the book is Come Back For Me.
Yes.
And it's a really fascinating book, and I'm so happy that you were on Joy on Paper today. And
well, thanks
are
for
you
having
working
me.
On something new?
yes, I am working on a second novel. I'm about two-thirds through it. So hoping to have it out and published in within the next year.
Okay. Well, then you'll be right back here on Joy on Paper so we can get to talk to you again, okay?
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
It was a joy. Bye-bye, thanks. Sharon.
Bye.
Bye. Wow. Yes, it is. It is an uplifting book, actually, and she's right. I hope that people will get it. These are difficult times, but you know, reading really helps and helps with understanding. It's just so tragic that we're going through all of this again, and I hope that you will get Sharon Hart Green's book. It's really excellent writing. Yeah, that's all I can say. You know, when we're going through these terrible, terrible times right now, a book like this, I think, helps put things a little bit in perspective. So you start thinking about the many layers of the problem. So I'm very happy she was on the program today. Now, one of the things I wanted to tell you is that I am so happy that the new Jack Reacher book is out. And so I'm going to be having an interview coming up with Andrew Child, who works with his brother on the Jack Reacher books, and now, of course, the new streaming video series should be out too. So lots of exciting things happening in the publishing world. We're getting some authors who are coming out who haven't, actually some who haven't written for a few years, and after the post-pandemic period, they're out there writing again, and I'm so happy that I've got a lot of great guests coming up. And again, I want to We mentioned Carol J. Perry. Carol J. Perry's birthday, 90th birthday, is coming up. And you can go to her website, Carol J. Perry, and see something about what she's going to be doing for her, I was going to say for her 13th birthday. It's not for her 13th birthday. Of course, 13 is a lucky number for her because now you see it. Book number 13 in her Witch City Mystery series just came out, and it is fantastic, and you will love it. So if you're looking for a cozy mystery, one that really makes you feel cozy, and also that where you get to learn about the seafaring history of Salem, which is absolutely fascinating. I learned so many things that I didn't know about Salem, and you'll enjoy Carol J. Perry's Now You See It. And that's, an example of writing is just so much fun, and you can keep doing it and keep doing it forever. Almost forever. Anyway, again, go to her website or go to Barnes & Noble or Amazon, and it's Carol J. Perry. Oh, and now, well, one of the things I always tell people is that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're lucky, to have those magic words said to you, lights, camera, action, and boy, oh boy, your book will be turned into a streaming video. And now I have to say bye-bye because and say something nice to somebody today. Bye-bye.